You know, we deal with a lot of topics on this program, many, 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 many. And what you're about to hear is one incredible story. Bruce Olof Solheim back with us, PhD. And we are going to be talking about a true story of contact with an ancient alien. The story is called Anzar the Progenitor, and progenitor means founder of a family. And this has been happening to Bruce for a long time. So he is next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Dr. Bruce Solheim, PhD, served in the U.S. Army as a jail guard, later as a helicopter pilot. He earned his PhD in history from Bowling Green State University. Bruce is currently a distinguished professor of history at Citrus College in Glendora, California, where he has taught a paranormal personal history course since the fall of 2018. He studies quantum theory and has developed a model that may help explain our quantum reality, ghosts, reincarnation, alien contact, and more. And Bruce has been abducted several times, has seen UFOs, continues to have contact with an alien and alien beings. Dr. Solheim is an associate member of the Parapsychological Association, a member of CIRO and MUFON as well, the Mutual UFO Network. Bruce, welcome back to the program. Good to have you.
Hey, thank you, George. It's great to be back.
My gosh, what a work here. The Anzar, the progenitor. And progenitor means like the starter of a family, right?
Right. The beginning. The original contact in this case.
And this has been going on for you for how many years now?
Well, I figured out that my first experience with him was in 1964, and that's when I was 6 years old. And I think he's been kind of with me the whole time. In 97, I had a very clear vision of him and communication with him. And then really since 2016, when I decided to start telling my paranormal stories, what's been happening to me since I was a kid. I've been in continuous contact with him since 2018.
It's an amazing story. Tell us, for people who don't know who Anzar is, and of course the book you just wrote, who is Anzar?
Yeah, he's a self-described ancient alien mystic. And he's in the spirit world, so he's from the progenitor. So he was the first. He said that he was the first contact for humans, and he often says that he gives us nudges. He uses the word nudges, which makes me laugh when he tells me that. And by the way, when he tells me this, it's through my the spirit walks I take when I get into a meditative state.
Okay,
I can talk to him. And I've been, continuously since 2018, and I transcribe all my contact with him during these spirit walks, and I record it on my phone, not that you can hear his voice on my phone, but I hear what he's saying, and I say it into my phone.
When
I come home, I transcribe it, and I have about 300 pages of transcripts, so that's what I used to write the book.
Has he ever arrived in a craft at all, or is all this done by some form of telepathy with you?
In 1964, he showed me through a holographic image a ship, but he didn't take me in the ship. He just kind of showed it to me. So I've never been in a ship with him. So it's always been, telepathy and a vision, being able to see him. I don't see him all the time. Sometimes I do see him.
Now, this picture on the cover,
ghost,
this picture on the cover of supposedly him, is that just a replica or an artist?
Yeah, that's just a replica. Yeah, that's just an artist's or the cover designer's version. I described kind of one of the ways that he looks. He always says, depict me as you wish, but the best way I describe him most of the time that I see him, he kind of looks proto-human. He's very tall, and he kind of looks proto-human. So, in fact, the only other person that's seen him was Lucinda, my friend Lucinda from the CIRO group. And she writes the foreword to the book and tells about an experience at a CIRO meeting where I invited Anzar to come to the meeting. I didn't tell anybody. And then at the end of the meeting, I asked, did anybody see anything? And Lucinda said, "Yeah, who's the big native-looking dude behind you?"
Huh.
And you know, and I'm like 6'3", so he's, you know, like 7 feet tall. And then I said, "Well, that's Anzar." And she goes, "You're kidding." And then she showed me her driver's license, and the address that she lived on at the time was Via de Anzar.
Wow.
So it was incredible synchronicity, and the fact that she's the only person that other person that's seen him, which is always nice to have confirmation in this type of stuff, because, you know, I mean, it is a fantastic story when you think about it.
Oh, my God, it's incredible. And
yeah.
Lucinda Morrill, that's a great story. By the way, I wanted to thank you on behalf of myself and Cheryl Jones for mentioning us in your acknowledgments. That's very nice of you.
Oh, yeah, you're welcome. Well, you know, this is you guys are a big part of my journey since I decided to start telling these stories. And because of I always like to mention my friend Gene, who passed away in 2016. A month after he passed away, he came to me in a vision, which I've had all my life. I have visions of people, and I talk to people who have passed on. But he told me that it was time to tell my stories. And as a result of that, I published my three timeless books, and now the last book, which is not, it's separate from the trilogy, you know, the timeless trilogy that we've talked about before. But yeah, so he encouraged me to do that. And I have regular contact with him too, you know, when I do these spirit walks.
I got to tell you, the cover, even though it's an artist's rendition, is scary.
Yeah. It is a little scary, but you know, it reminds me that this kind of stuff is rather frightening. But if you can work through kind of the scariness of it, there's a great reward for it. And and you know, not everything that looks beautiful is beautiful.
That's true. How often do you connect with Anzar?
I take on average about 2 to 4 spirit walks a week.
Okay.
I'm here in Southern California in San Gabriel Mountains, so I have a really nice route that I take up towards the San Gabriel Mountains. And the impression I get is that this route, because most roads were used by Native Americans at one point, they were trading trails or whatever, or animal trails. And so I follow this route up towards the San Gabriel Mountains, and that's where I usually, you know, that's where I connect to him. And I do the standard protection, you know, before I embark on this. And then, I ask to talk to him, and then I start communicating with him. And it's there. I was talking to Lucinda about it. She's a shaman in kind of the Native American tradition. And she told me that there's an integration that is taking place that makes it easier for me to contact him and for me to understand what he's saying. So, and you know, that's how I do it. And that's how often. Sometimes it's only twice a week, but sometimes it's up to 4 times a week that I take these spirit walks. It is kind of draining, and it's only the actual spirit communication probably only lasts about 10 minutes as I'm walking up this very long road towards the mountains. But
is he always there for you?
He's been there every single time I've asked. Yes. Now sometimes he is you know, busy or preoccupied, I would say, but he still always makes time for me, which is great. And I always talk to my friend Gene, and often I talk to my parents. And sometimes I have people, you know, because this is mediumship, basically. It's the same kind of thing. I have people say, "Hey, you know, I have a loved one that passed away. Could you try to make a connection?" So I'll do that. I don't do it for money. I just do it for friends and, you know, who are grieving. And hopefully I can provide them with some kind of closure.
Is he in touch with other people too, Bruce, or just you?
He was able to communicate with Lucinda, and also I found out recently a friend of both of ours, Terry Lovelace, was able through a medium to reach him, and he was reluctant to tell anybody about it. So now there's actually a third person who's been in contact with him, and well, I guess a fourth if you consider the medium he was working with, but. He didn't want to say anything publicly until he had asked me. He said, "Is it okay to say that I've been in contact with him?" And I said, "Of course. That just means more, you know, corroboration, right?" It just you know, more people that have actually talked to him. I don't think he's seen him, but he's been able to reach out to him. I don't know how much information. I don't think he's gotten a lot of information, but at least he's reached out to him. So he's expanding his contact list, I guess. But as far as I don't know if he's in touch with anybody else. Nobody's ever said anything who's read my books. Or
is he a physical being somewhere, or is it all strictly non-physical?
It's he's in the spirit world, so he's ancient and
okay. So he's passed on, I guess.
What's that?
Could is it accurate to say that he's passed on?
Yes, he is in the spirit world. And you know, it's funny when I say, you know, I noticed he didn't use the word dead, because I made the mistake the first time I talked to, when I had that vision of Gene in 2016, a month after he had passed from this world. I said, Gene, what's it like to be dead? And he kind of laughed and he said, you know, I don't feel dead. I'm still very much alive, just in a different space. So,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so he is in Anzar is in the spirit world. He's never like physically appeared in my reality anyway.
Let's talk about some of the things, Bruce, that he has embarked on you and mm-hmm. has talked about. What are some of the things? We'll get into his predictions later on tonight, but generally, what are some of the profound things he has said to you?
Yeah, one of the things that I think is really important is this question of, you know, who are the aliens, quote-unquote aliens, and what do they want? And since he, you know, represents, at least in an ancient sense, and his response, and Gene also says this, he says, we are the aliens. In other words, we are all the aliens. We're all connected,
sure.
In other words. And at first, I didn't understand when he said, we are the aliens. I thought, okay, that's fine. You guys, where you are. And then he corrected me. No, we are all the aliens.
He uses the phrase revelation to you a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah, he did. It's in contrast to the term that is used in the ufology community of disclosure. But when you think about it, disclosure is kind of an other-directed activity. That's where we sit here and wait for the government or people in authority to disclose the precious information that they have. Whereas he says it's revelation, where it's revealed to us as individuals, as people, from the grassroots, from the ground up. And it's really our responsibility. And he said that's the best way to look at it, because if you just wait there for the government or people in authority to tell you what the truth is, you could be waiting and we have waited a very long time, and we're still waiting, although we're inching along, you know. But so that's what he means by revelation, and it's very much a very, you know, as it's intended to be, you know, a very spiritual idea. You know, sure. You know, if you look at the definition of revelation, of course, there's the book of Revelation in the Christian Bible in the New Testament, but it's revealing the divine truth, which is really what this is about, because it's supposed to lead us to the next higher level of evolution as human beings, or what Anzar calls a leap of consciousness that's occurring.
When you went public with knowledge of Anzar, what was the original reaction?
I would say that it was mostly people were accepting of it. And I can just even, it's kind of funny. When I first started talking about Anzar to the Ciro group, which you think would be a very receptive group,
exactly.
the Close Encounter Resource Organization headed by Yvonne Smith, they, you know, I asked them later, when it came out with the book, I said, what did you guys think when I first started talking about Anzar? And these are very, you know, these are people who've had UFO experiences and alien contact. And they said, well, you know, we wanted to believe you, but, you know, there's always that skepticism. It's a fantastic story. So, you know, they kind of took it with a grain of salt. And then as time has gone on, and I've provided them with more of the information and some of the prophecies or predictions, they now say he is exactly who he says he is. So, and if, and I think other people, you know, the reaction to the book, some of the comments, some people are, you know, a little taken aback, or they've reached, you know, a boggle factor, I guess. But most people are very receptive to it, because the message is so is so pure. I mean, this idea that he mentions every single time I talk to him, he reminds me to keep love in my heart and operate from a position of love. And, you know, that it sounds very simple and simplistic, but it is extremely hard, especially in today's world where there's so much anger and hatred and division. And I try to live that every single day and try to move through life in that way. And it really makes it a lot easier. You know, it doesn't have to be that you're a pushover, you know, because there's also tough love, right? So,
didn't he indirectly warn you about COVID?
Yeah, a year before. So this was a year before.
Probably around 18.
Early 2019. He told me that there'd be a series of calamities that would occur. And he didn't mention COVID, or didn't even necessarily mention a disease, although he did say there would be a series of calamities that would be that would probably lead to the death of millions of people, and to be prepared. So every time he tells me, you know, to be prepared or tells me what could be happening, I always say, okay, can I tell other people? And he said, yeah. But be careful, because predictions can be wrong, but preparations are never wrong. So there's always a caveat to it. And I remember in January of 2020, when I don't think we even had any cases of COVID yet, at least very few.
Just starting.
In the United States.
Just starting, yeah.
He told me, without me even asking, he said that this COVID-19 came from a weapons lab in China, and he said it was likely, these are the words he used, likely an accident.
That's exactly what I said back in December of 2019. It was just, I don't believe in coincidences, Bruce, and the fact that this happened in Wuhan, and they had a viral lab there that has been testing things like this. Come on.
I know. And at the same time, George, at the same time, I had a Chinese exchange student, a very nice, she's probably in her 30s in my history class at the time this was going on in early 2000. And she told me that she was from that area. And she said, you know, this came from that weapons lab. Whatever they're saying is not true. They didn't come from the wet market. You know, we don't eat bats.
No, they might, but we don't.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, and that was, you know, so not only did Anzar tell me that, but then, you know, I had this Chinese exchange student tell me that too. And I've held on to that the whole time. And of course, that was something that could get you into, you know, some hot water. Of course, now it's all come back around again.
Absolutely. Now, has he predicted an end to this? Did he see it ending at all?
He hasn't told me that there'd be an end. He did talk about, that it would be extended through variants, and the Delta variant, although it would be less deadly, would be very, you know, is going to be persistent. So to me, it seems like it's going to be with us for a while. And it you know, kind of like the seasonal flu, only a little more serious, of course. But I think it's going to be with us for a while because of the mutations. So,
what?
And, you know, I'm a historian, not a scientist, but that's my understanding of what he is telling me.
What planetary system was he on when he was alive?
He told me. I asked him that, and he said the Rigel system within Orion. So he said Rigel in Orion. So I know Rigel is a trinary star system. And it's kind of like, I didn't press him for any particular name of a planet or anything, but I think it's kind of like when you're overseas and people ask where you're from, you know, usually say the biggest reference point.
Yeah. Sure. Hold on for a second, Bruce. We're already at a break. That was fast. We'll talk more about your work, Anzar the Progenitor, next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. George Norrie with you, along with Bruce Solheim. His latest work is called Anzar the Progenitor. What would you do without Anzar in your life anymore, Bruce?
Well, it's it's kind of like what Lucinda said. You know, there's a process of integration that's been going on. So he is part of my life. I mean, you know, I talk to him 2 to 4 times a week. He's a big part of my life.
He's like a best friend, isn't he?
In a way, he told me that he said an aspect of you is an aspect of me, and that we are related. And I said, well, aren't we all related? If you're the progenitor, aren't you really related to everybody? And he said, yeah, but specifically, I've reached out to you. And I think that the reason is, you know, kind of like with ghosts and mediumship, the folks in the spirit world, which, you know, by the way, I the way I understand it, the spirit world, the alien world, the quantum world are all really the same thing. That's how I believe it all works. So he has reached out to me maybe because it's easier for him, or I tend to be very receptive. I mean, if there's something paranormal going on, I usually know about it. And it's not always that I'm seeking it out either. In fact, I'm kind of like a lightning rod for it.
Aside from COVID, what are some of the things he tells you about for the future?
Yeah, he... Well, I can go back to some of the things like before the George Floyd stuff and the riots, and he said that there would be civil unrest across the country. And he told me that it would be around Memorial Day. And of course, that's when it was, when the unfortunate incident took place. And then he told me in September of last year, he said that there would be a pocket revolution. He used the term pocket revolution, which I wasn't familiar with. I mean, I've studied political science and history. I've never really heard that term before. And then he even mentioned, he said that a pocket revolution that would be known as an insurrection. Now, I think the word insurrection is used kind of improperly in terms of the way I, you know, look at things in history. An insurrection would be a serious attempt to take over a government, which, you know, I don't think that's what it was. It was a terrible, you know, there were some people who did some bad things for sure.
Sure.
And the violence that occurred. But he used that term in September of last year.
Could that have been applied to what happened? Probably, huh?
What's that?
Could that have been applied to what happened in January? Probably.
Yeah, I think that's what it was, you know, and it's, you know, the whole thing is tied together because he said that there was, you know, that the civil unrest bordering on civil war, which is still brewing, as we know. I mean, it's still, this hasn't, you know, none of this stuff has really gone away. And I think we're more divided now than I remember us being even in the 60s.
And people are so uptight these days, Bruce, too. They're just...
What's that, George? I'm sorry.
People are so uptight these days.
Yes, they are. They're very easily triggered. And, you know, I'm a college teacher. I teach college history, and I've been doing that for 30 years now. And I haven't been in the classroom since March of last year, was it March? Yeah.
Are you doing it by Zoom?
I've been Zooming and asynchronous as well, which I prefer to the Zoom online teaching, but where everything is just set up and you know, they use message boards and so forth. But I'm kind of, I think things have changed so much for young people that I'm really wondering what it's going to be like in the classroom. If people are going to be very easily triggered when things that we would normally talk about, history is filled with, you know, there's great things, but there's a lot of terrible things too that we have to talk about. And I've always told my students that I'm not going to provide a comfort zone for you. You're learning when you're challenged. You're learning when you're out of your comfort zone. If you just go to a class and you preach to the choir, nobody's learning anything. And so that's what I've always told them. And I'm not sure that that's going to be as well received now. I'm kind of apprehensive, if I put that, I'll describe it that way, to go back into a traditional classroom, to tell you the truth.
You might have to.
Yes, I will. I'm scheduled in January. In fall, they're still online, but where I teach.
Still. Okay.
But in January, I'm scheduled to go back into, for winter session, to go back into the classroom again.
What do your students say about ANZAR in this situation with you?
They, you know, that was the other fear I had, that, you know, when I started publishing these paranormal books was, you know, that my the college would, you know, retire me early, my colleagues would abandon me, my students would laugh at me. But it's been very, I haven't had them read ANZAR yet, it's, you know, because it just came out. And it's
a little bit at a time, right?
Yeah. But I do mention him in the third Timeless book, which they do read, The Timeless Trinity. The one with the reptilian lady on the cover, the scary reptilian lady.
Right.
And they are receptive to it. You know, they're very open to it. And I think that they're, you know, that they are very open-minded about it. So I haven't, you know, I haven't heard any really negative things. I mean, there are people that are kind of frightened by it, of course, as are a lot of people. But that's, you know, so I think the reception's been good with young people in regard to that. But it's the... you know, I think it's the political situation that is really the worrisome thing for them. And they sound, you know, when I read their papers, they sound a little lost, you know.
A lot of people are lost these days.
Yeah, and I think the responsibility I have, or that a lot of, you know, older people have. I'm 62 now, so it's weird to say older person, but I guess I am an older person. That, you know, we have this responsibility to help them frame things, you know, and to try to understand things. And I think they're kind of adrift, and they don't know what to grab onto, you know, to make sense. And I think it's at this time, more than any other time in my lifetime, I sense that is a big responsibility that we have for younger people, to try to give them something to hang on to. And, you know, when I see protests against our, you know, people from the United States protesting against the United States, I often think, well, I think it was China. Somebody, one of the athletes did something, or no, it was somebody in Hong Kong said something disparaging during the playing of their national anthem, and the person was put in prison. You know,
well, how about the head of North Korea today killed one of his military leaders because the guy was opposed to what he was saying about the, and I got to give Kim credit this time. He was developing a plan to get food to his people,
yeah.
But the military guy thought it was nuts and basically said that it was ignorant. So
They
had him shot.
Yeah. No, the right to dissent, of course, the right to free speech is essential, but you know, there's also this idea of being grateful. As my mother always used to tell me, she said it in Norwegian. I'll say it in Norwegian, then I'll translate. Den dårlig fugl som skiter sin egen reir, and that's it's a bad bird that defecates in its own nest. And I've always held that to my heart. You know that. Yeah, it's one thing to, you know, speak out when you think things are wrong, but also to be grateful for, you know, the privileges that we have and the rights that we have and the freedom that we have. So that's kind of a thing that I think maybe younger people, you know, they need to maybe understand. They have to find some moorings there, you know.
Well, ANZAR has basically asked you to be the light, the bridge. What does he mean by that?
Yeah, the light. He always says, be the light. So my first impression of that was just, you know, to kind of illuminate, you know, as an educator, as an older person, you know, that you help, whatever collective wisdom we have, we want to share, you know, to kind of bring the illumination. Also the light as opposed to the dark, you know, to try to do the right thing and encourage people to do the right thing. But it's even deeper than that. When I really have gotten into it, I did some research and found out that, our very DNA emits photons, emits light. So we literally are the light. And there are some scientists who believe that that's how telepathy and psychokinesis and a lot of our paranormal things happen, because we do generate light from our very DNA level, and that's how we connect in the quantum universe. It's absolutely fascinating. When I get these bits and pieces, you know, I obviously don't have it all figured. I got a few puzzle pieces that I put together, and I share with other people, and I listen to what they say. And that really came to me when I figured that part out, that we literally are the light. So when he says, be the light, I have to use that. We all have to use that in every sense of the word, in every possible way. When he says, be the bridge, that's actually something that's been with me my whole life. And he's just reminded me of that. This idea, a bridge connects to outcroppings, like in a physical bridge, or in a song, a bridge connects one part of the song to another part of the song. And a bridge, in our case, would be between warring factions, between people who aren't listening to each other, and trying to be in the middle of that and try to help facilitate that communication. And I think that's what he's talking about. And also, for people who are really kind of dumbfounded and baffled by the UFOs and aliens and the paranormal, to be a bridge from their everyday subjective reality to this objective quantum reality, to serve as a bridge. And I think that's a role I've been preparing for my whole life. I even remember this old Norwegian lady who was a friend of my parents. My parents would have them over for coffee. And this old lady, she didn't have children, but she really wanted to talk to me every time I was there. And I thought, why does she always want to talk to me? And every time I saw her, she said, let's make the bridge. And she taught me, you just put your hand up, kind of your palm down, kind of lean it about 45 degrees, and you connect to another person and you make a bridge. And so I always thought it was just kind of a silly little game I thought this old lady wanted to play, but it's actually become kind of a guidepost for me, this idea that I have to be the bridge. So Ansar reminded me of that.
You have said that some of these experiences for you are traumatic. Explain that.
Yeah.
What happened?
It's both enlightening and traumatic. And if you talk, and you've of course talked to a lot of folks that have had alien experiences and like my friend Terry Lovelace, very traumatic experiences. If I talk about 1964, the first occurrence with Ansar, although it was a very positive thing in that he rescued me from a would-be child molester. I mean, it was that serious. That's how important that connection was, that he was able to save me from that. But as a result of that first, seeing him, and I thought he was a monster. I said, you look like a monster. And Ansar told me at that time, this is 1964 when I was only six, he said, I might look like a monster, but it's that the man that was our neighbor that lived
above. That was the monster.
He was the monster. So that's why I have that in my head.
How did he intercede, by the way?
I remember seeing a light in our backyard, and I wonder, what is that light? There shouldn't be a light in our backyard, and these neighbors live just above us on the hill. And by the way, we lived just below a Nike missile site. So, there's always alien stuff around
those sites,
nuclear facilities. This was the early 60s, right? So 64. And I saw this light. And then I saw his, kind of like I see ghosts. They're kind of semi-translucent, or what we'd now say maybe a hologram or holographic image. But he was communicating to me. And he was telling me that I don't have to go to that house anymore, because that's where I would go and they would babysit me. And I knew there was something strange going on, without going into too many details, but I knew there was something strange going on in that house. Now, I was never victimized by it, but Ansar told me, you don't have to go there anymore. And he said, and you can tell your parents you don't want to go there anymore, and they will accept it. And which they did. They didn't even, I told my mom, I don't want to go to that house anymore. And she said, fine, that's fine. So, he also showed me this holographic image of a ship too. So, but as a result of that, as wonderful as that was, I was traumatized in a sense, because for the next 2 years, I had a speech impediment. I could not talk without stammering or stuttering so
really
badly that I had to go to a special speech class every every school day for 2 hours, I'd be taken off to a speech therapy class.
And that reason was what?
It was the trauma of the experience.
Of the experience. Not ANZAR, but the experience.
Yeah, the experience. And also, you know, meeting this alien who I thought was a monster who ended up saving me. It was a wonderful thing that he saved me, but also it was very traumatic for me as a six-year-old to comprehend, you know, what's going on here.
Sure.
So for 2 years, it was so bad. And of course, you know, kids can be cruel, and I had trouble speaking, and so it just made it worse. But after 2 years, I was able to go back and, you know.
And I bet just start, one start day it cleared up and it was gone.
Yes. And I did some research on, you know, speech pathology, and I found that's one of the reasons that kids have stuttering or stammering problems is that they were traumatized as young children. And with the proper therapy, they can learn to not stammer and stutter.
Where do people get the book, ANZAR, the Progenitor?
It's available on Amazon, along with the three timeless books. So all four of my paranormal books are on Amazon.
Bruce, when we come back at the top of the hour, let's talk about some of ANZAR's predictions for the future. Things that we can write down and just track, and let's see what happens there. Plus, we're going to take some phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM, so the phone lines are now open. Take a question or two for Bruce Solheim and his incredible experience. We will be back.